listen to what they're saying about Brutalitopia.
Fuck you, Brutalitopia!
Fuck you, Joe!
Welcome to the Brutalitopia Podcast. Hey everybody, this is Mick from Brutalitopia here, bringing you the second Brutalitopia Podcast. It's been a little while since we did our first one, but we're back. And there are four of us here today. Two from the Brutalitopia crew, Durf and Tom. Durf and Tom, say hello.
Hello.
You.
And we have one special guest with us today, actually. First guest, monumental day, first guest on the Brutalitopia podcast. He is a features editor for Invisible Oranges and also writes for No Clean Singing under the moniker Bad Wolf. Joseph Schaefer is also with us today. Joe, say hello.
Hey.
And the theme today, I'm sure we'll get sidetracked at some point, but the theme that we went for the podcast today is we like to hit the hot button issues here at Brutalitopia, and oh boy, is the debate on OPETH an ever hot one, at least for clickbait.
Scorching.
Yeah. So that's the theme for today, is just kind of debating on OPETH's new sound and just kind of what we make of it. So, gentlemen, I know we had originally another person that was supposed to be on this podcast today that I had nicely sorted out into two teams of two, kind of being in a debate style of, you know, two people supporting OPETH's new sound and two people not supporting OPETH's new sound. But, you know, unfortunately, one of those people could not make it today with us. Do we want to talk some shit to that person before we begin? Get it out of our system?
I'd rather just leave it in the system and just make it. I don't want to just limit us talking shit on a quitter to like 30 seconds at the beginning. I want it spread out and interspersed.
Yeah, we're gonna have to just kind of throw it in there and just do as we do, and hit that person. We'll know who we're talking about.
Okay, Joe, do you support this?
Hey,
that's an affirmative.
We will take that as a yes. So, gentlemen, I guess just to start this all off, since it's just the four of us here, we'll kind of keep it like an open forum, so there's no people necessarily on a side. We'll kind of debate, you know, the pros and cons, I guess. Let's backtrack about 3 years, 2011. OPETH comes out with their album Heritage, which very much, as you all know, a divergence from their sound of progressive death metal that they became known for. I guess just everyone's take on whether that sound is kind of like an honest, you know, attempt at something new, or just kind of them trying to turn out something because they're OPETH and knowing people will buy it. So whoever wants to start.
I mean, I think it was definitely an honest attempt. I don't think it was a kind of lazy or half-assed, you know, hey, let's just put out a record and people are going to buy it. It doesn't matter. I think it's genuinely where the band wanted to go, or at least where Michael Åkerfeldt wanted the band to go.
I think you need to, you know, okay, so Heritage, I reviewed on No Clean Singing. I gave it a positive review. But I think to really understand the story of that record, like, you really need to sort of expand a little bit and remember that. So the record before that was Watershed.
Right.
I didn't think Watershed was the best thing that they'd done, and Watershed was the last record with Martin Lopez on drums. No, it was the first record with Axenrot on drums, not Martin Lopez.
Right.
And
right.
So, like, up to Heritage, OPETH had been shedding original members except Åkerfeldt. And so now it's just Åkerfeldt and Martin Mendez, the bassist. And so, like, I wasn't that surprised when the sound kind of took that shift. I think if you're like listening, if you listen to his discography from Blackwater Park on, the ratio of like metal to prog does start shifting toward prog more and more and more. And so, like, I wasn't surprised when he's like, you know, here's an album that's just prog songs.
So it just kind of seemed like more of a natural progression to you.
I wasn't surprised. Okay. There's songs I like on Heritage. There's songs I like on Pale Communion. There's songs that I don't like on both.
Sure.
So I'm not going to bring the pitchforks out just because he did a thing that I think anyone...
Pitchfork liked it.
I don't think they did. I doubt it. anyone else?
Tom, your thoughts?
Well, my experience with the band really started with Blackwater Park, probably 2008, and you know, I really liked that it was the elements of a lot of classically styled progressive bands, but also, you know, sealed up in this nice little death metal envelope, if you will, and kind of, you know, mixed together, and it was a real good combination of those two styles, because it was clearly the influence he had, plus living in Sweden and going to all these great record stores, buying, you know, albums from bands like, you know, Morbid and Nirvana 2002 and all these ridiculously good Swedish death metal bands. It was really a marriage of those two styles. But when, you know, when Heritage came out and I managed to catch them on tour, it was a very interesting show. It was actually not a bad show, but it was all of the, I guess you would call it Opeth's lighter fare.
Sure. Because
there wasn't a death growl to be heard during the entire show. And it was nice, but I said, you know, you could kind of hear the unrest in the crowd of, you know, like, Ghost of Perdition.
Right.
And, you know, like, The Drapery Falls and Leper Affinity and, you know, all like, their classic style things. And, you know, Akerfeldt didn't bat an eyelash. He didn't care, and they were kind of going, you know, this is a strong word to use, or a strong, you know, phrase to use, but they kind of took the Metallica route in that they're quote unquote making music for themselves, and you know, that's all well and good too, but when you look at a band like Nile, Carl Sanders has his progressive rock side project that's under his name and not under the Nile name.
Sure.
I take exception to the fact that they still bandy about with the name Opeth when they're not playing to what I believe are Opeth songs. So it's not that it's bad music, it's not that it's great music, but it's that it's not Opeth music, and I think that if it were under a different moniker, it would probably not bother me quite as much. But now I feel like they're making this music and also kind of resting on their laurels, so to speak. And I feel like if they had gone a different route with the name, maybe, you know, maybe it wouldn't be such a big deal. But, you know, using Opeth for that doesn't really make all that much sense to me, other than from a marketing standpoint.
Sure. Now, do you guys think that this is kind of, how do I say, something that, you know, bands, obviously, once they're around for so long, want to do things that are a little different? Granted, Opeth's sound that we, you know, tend to think of it is something that includes a lot of different sounds, a lot of progressive, you know, death metal things thrown in there. Do you think that Heritage and their latest Pale Communion are kind of just like something like we're kind of tired of just the death metal stuff and we just want to try this? Or, I mean, you kind of have to let bands out on a little bit of a leash once they've been around for so long and maybe not, you know, expect them to do the same kind of what you would expect them to kind of album.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I mean, you know, like, and I apologize, I can't remember if it was Joseph or Tom who brought this point up, but, you know, you go back through their discography for the last 20 years, and there's always been that progressive influence in there with the death metal. And so it's very clearly been something that, you know, Akerfeldt and then the rest of the band have, you know, been passionate about and really enjoyed doing. So I think it does kind of make sense for them to strip it down and just, you know, try to do that music without the death metal.
Here's my thing is I like prog rock. And I like a lot of the records that Akerfeldt is referencing with his new material. Like I've, like, having read interviews with him, like, I know that he and I have, like, similar tastes about certain things. I mean, I'm a Yes fanboy. I love Genesis. Their longtime producer has been Steven Wilson of Porcupine Tree, and while I don't like Steven Wilson's solo records very much, the last one was all right. I'm a diehard Porcupine Tree fan.
Sure.
So my issue with it isn't so much that he decided we're just going to be a progressive rock band. Lots of metal bands have done that. Paradise Lost sounded like Depeche Mode for probably like a decade, and they're one of my favorite bands. Honestly, you know, Anathema, Catatonia, there's a long like lineage of bands that start off as like prog metal bands and then just go prog and don't lose the quality, I don't think. My issue is that part of what made Opeth really great before he made this transition were these like really ornate, elaborate, multi-part songs have huge choruses and then interesting refrains, and they have divergences, and they're really like structurally intense songs.
Right.
They feel like sort of like a world unto themselves, right? And he was a band that he was a musician that could keep my attention for 15 minutes, for 20 minutes, keep my rapt attention. And the issue is that while he's made the transition to prog well, what he hasn't done so well is like been able to keep my attention that long in the course of his song. I think the best songs on Heritage were kind of the shortier, poppier, more singer-songwriter songs were, I think, better than like the 20 minute, here's the bit with the bongos and the flute. And that,
do you think that just sounded like too kind of typical prog? Like, because there's a fine line that people like. It's interesting because I know Durf and I like love those two Steven Wilson albums, and there's a lot of that kind of, you know, proggy like flute interlude kind of stuff, you know, in there. Like, do you feel a lot of Heritage and Pale Communion was kind of like stuff kind of got watered down with that too much of them trying to be too proggy?
I think he's got to learn how to write a song over again, because he's got a lot of experience writing progressive death metal songs. He doesn't have a lot of experience writing prog songs.
Okay.
Right. So some of the songs are great. On that Pale Communion record, I think the song River is one of like the best things he's done. On Heritage, I really like the song I Feel the Dark. I think those are great. I think Slither's great. I just think he was batting like these albums where that are like 8-10 songs long and every song is good. And now he's doing right. records where like some of the songs are not good. And that in of itself is like enough of an earth shaker to me.
Now, Tom and Durf, to kind of what Joe was just going on, what do you think are some of the, perhaps the strengths and weaknesses of Heritage and Pale Communion?
It's been a while since I've listened to Heritage. Obviously, you know, Pale Communion is one that I've heard more recently too. I'm like, it's gotten to the point where like, I feel like I'm forgetting song titles, but you would start asking me like, what are the strengths of like Still Life and Blackwater Park? I could like go on for a while with those.
Yeah, no, just kind of overall impressions, what you kind of felt about it.
I mean, I even felt like even just like you know the bands that Ickerfeld liked, and when you look at their I think it was a live DVD or something of them at like the Royal Prince Albert Hall or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
let's just be Deep Purple. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, like every guitar player that liked that kind of music wanted to be fucking Ritchie Blackmore, or they wanted to be, or the keyboardist wanted to be John Lord. But like you look at songs that I remember with Heritage, I felt like I liked, let's see, what song was it? I think it was Slither that I really liked a lot. It kind of had like a cool little underlying, you know, riff to it. The Devil's Orchard was okay. Like with Pale Communion, I just like, I'm having trouble coming back to it because I'm not sure what I really like that much on it. To be honest, I think Heritage might have been better. But I felt like maybe this year was such a strong year for music that coming back to one album that I didn't particularly care for all that much made it, you know, that made the task of liking Pale Communion or giving it extra time because of who it is, that task became a lot more of a taller task.
Sure.
So, I'm just thinking some songs, like Moon Above, Sun Below was way too long. That was kind of my issue with, like, when I was mentioning before the podcast, my problem with Ego Dominus Tuus from Nightbringer. I just felt like some things just went on way too long. And, you know, the effect of what they were trying to go for, I felt, was just kind of gone at that point. Like, after a certain amount of time, it's like, all right, where is this going? And why is this not another song at this point?
Sure. Durf, your thoughts?
I think overall, the two albums... biggest strength is the way that he kind of encapsulates this like darker feeling of kind of like dread and woe, and really kind of keeps that, like, it's still very, like, you know, for lack of a better word, they still feel like, you know, evil records. Like, they feel right up there with, you know, like the foreboding nature of like Ghost Reveries and Still Life, which are two of my favorite Opeth records.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's the biggest strength, is that there's still that kind of like feeling of unease circulating through the albums. I think their biggest weaknesses, to be honest, and this might go back to what Joe was saying about, you know, he doesn't have a lot of experience as a progressive songwriter, is that I don't think the songs go far enough. I don't think they're as adventurous or as daring as they could have been, as anything else that Opeth has done up until, you know, Heritage. Like, you got to think that you're going from writing these, you know, 10-minute plus, you know, amalgamations of death metal and progressive rock and some kind of like jazzy ambient, you know, music, and now you're cutting it down to, you know, 5 and 6 minute progressive, you know, ballads or jams. And I think that he really kind of, I almost feel like with both of these records, Åkerfeldt didn't go for it as much as he could have. I mean, there's some exceptions. Like, I think Goblin off of Pale Communion is a great track and definitely an homage to that band. But overall, I just think that it's, you know, when I listen to Heritage and Pale Communion, as much as I like them, they feel far more limited and almost neutered compared to the rest of Opeth's discography.
Well, that brings up another point, too, that... when you say like they didn't go far enough, it's kind of hard talking about progressive stuff this way, is like, kind of, you know, like we're defining progressive songs as kind of like these long drawn out structures over the course of, you know, 10 plus minutes. I think we can all agree that a song doesn't necessarily have to like be drawn out that much to be considered progressive and, you know, good progressive music, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, some of the better songs are longer songs, but that just happens to be, I feel like, more of an exception. Like, you know, talking about, obviously, Mick and I don't know about the other two of you guys, but like Close to the Edge, you know, the song Close to the Edge by Yes is fucking amazing and it's long. 2112 by Rush, you know, those length of songs, but there's something going on and there's always something a little bit different to keep you hooked into it, and you're not like being like, oh, is the song over? Because I felt like, you know, there were times where I was like that, but when I was listening to things like The Leper Affinity or The Moor or Moonlap's Vertigo and things like that, it's just like, oh, it's like I don't want these songs to end.
Yeah,
it's like you're getting the complete opposite too. It's like, What do you think? Do you think this is what Åkerfeldt was thinking when he was finishing his continental breakfast at the end of Heir Apparent? With the dishes clinking.
What's like the thing I look back on is you look at all the different styles that permeated all of their, we'll call them their death metal records. And, you know, one of my absolute favorite Opeth songs is Face of Melinda. And yeah. It just starts with that nice little like jazzy guitar. And, you know, if you take out the like distortion and, you know, leave those riffs in toward the end and get rid of the death metal growls. I mean, I think that's an amazing progressive song structure. And even if you like cut it in half, it's got enough stuff in there where it's like, you know, if you change, you know, throw in a mellotron or a flute instead of guitar and you've got something really kind of crazy and out there. And I felt that, you know, the last two albums were kind of lacking that sense of, you know, it just wasn't, you know, I'm trying to find a way to phrase it that isn't, you know, because obviously these songs don't have to be 20 minutes long for them to be good. But it's just like there's almost no ballsiness to it. It's like, oh, hey, I'm getting rid of the death metal elements, so that's a huge change, and that's going to be enough, when really it's like, well, you still have to write, you know, great musically gripping songs for it to matter.
Interesting is if we take these two albums, Pale Communion and Heritage, and compare them to, say, an album like Damnation, which is another Opeth album that happens to be one of my favorites, that's also one that's not metal really at all in the way we think of it. What do you think, assuming you guys hold Damnation in a high regard as well, think that that album accomplished more than these two recent ones did?
The thing about Damnation,
I could throw on
for me,
Damnation anytime, man. That's great, great, great album.
Damnation's probably, I would probably pound for pound the Opeth album that I've listened to the most. And this is one of my favorite bands. I love the whole discography. Even the new stuff, there's bits of them that I love, but I don't love them unabashedly the way that I love Damnation. And I think part of that is Damnation had a thematic cohesion to it, because as I remember, like, Damnation was written originally as him writing lullabies for his daughter. Like, yep. I remember reading some. That's correct. And so, like, in Damnation, there was a singular focus, and that's part of what makes it gel as an album. And I do hear a little bit of that on Pale Communion. It does seem more, part of the issue with Heritage is that Heritage seemed very chopped up.
It's kind of like throw shit on the wall, see what sticks.
It was like, here are the 10 songs that I've written in the last 3 years that I like. They aren't related. Mm-hmm. That's what that felt like. To make a small tangent, I think there's also another point made that is like, if you look at great prog bands, the seminal prog bands, and you go back, a lot of them did go through this kind of stripped down pop phase. Yes did Owner of a Lonely Heart. Genesis, you know, you had Phil Collins' Genesis doing Invisible Touch, which is still, like, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not
the original stuff.
But it's still good for what it is. And, you know, Peter Gabriel did So, which is still, like, So is, like, as good of a pop album as Michael Jackson's Thriller is. Like, it's an incredible record. And so I think it's kind of a, fuck, even King Crimson did Three of a Perfect Pair, right? So I think it's, and those are good songs. I think it's natural for, like, these prog bands to hit the edge and then cut it back and try and find another form of excellence there. And I think in a sense, it's pretty obvious that, like, that's what's probably happening to Akerfeldt right now.
Do you think then that's a question of Opeth and, like, when you said that they kind of reach the edge and then kind of tone it back, do you kind of think that that's maybe a way of the band saying, hey, we kind of peaked out here in terms of, like, what we originally kind of wanted to go for?
I don't think you're ever going to get an Opeth album that's as, you're going to be hard pressed to find an Opeth album that's more dynamic and dramatic and gothic and engaging in that way as Ghost Reveries, which was their last like truly like super metal like
masterpiece.
Yeah. Metal.
Which is interesting that you bring up Ghost Reveries, because I just recently re-listened to that the other day, and I love Ghost Reveries. And with the exception of the Grand Conjuration, like the entire back half of that record is very, you know, not metal.
It's softer, yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, like I'm looking at the track list right now, and it's, you know, once you get past, now I'm looking at the track list.
Like Baying of the Hounds?
Yeah, yeah. And you get into like Atonement and, you know, Reverie, Harlequin Forest, and Hours of Wealth, and then like they bring it back to the metal.
In Isolation Years.
Yeah, and Isolation Years is just like a mournful dirge-like ballad. You know, and then if you know, on the special edition, they close with that Soldier of Fortune cover, mm-hmm. Which I think is a damn fine cover.
It's a great cover.
Wait, is that the Thin Lizzy Soldier of Fortune?
No, Deep Purple.
Okay. I guess that makes a little more sense.
But it's like, you know, so it's interesting to me that it's, but even that, even the last half of that album still feels more in tune with. It seems like that makes more sense as a sound, and like it works really well. And part of me wonders if just the production change that they went with on Heritage and Pale Communion has a lot to do with it, because it's a lot more like natural and warmer sounding than their earlier work.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things on Ghost Reveries that are like completely unique to that record. I mean, first of all, the whole thing is, because I once tried to learn a little bit of it, it's in some weird open tuning, like it's in like A minor standard. So that's like super proggy about it. It's in this weird tuning.
Not standard tuning.
Well, if you see him live, everyone retunes their entire instrument before they play a Ghost Reveries song. It's the first record with keys, with like a dedicated keyboardist.
Okay. And yeah, I guess that is true. Interesting.
It's so like, and that's the first album where like you get the organ rocking as hard as his guitars are. And also it's his last concept album. I mean, Watershed a little bit is about being a parent.
Loosely. Yeah.
Loosely. But Ghost Reveries is like a concept album with a story. Not that it makes any sense, but that's in true prog rock fashion. The story doesn't actually make much sense. But there's like the guy and his mother dies and his like siblings drive him out and he's hunted through the woods and
he kills his mother.
Yeah. And then, to take his revenge, he summons the devil and becomes the Antichrist, and that's the end of the record. That's what the Grand Conjuration is, right?
And then he lives in, after he does that and everything happens, that's Isolation Years of just like, well, I did this, and now I'm forced to live alone, and I have nothing.
Yeah, because I'm now a super powerful demon that lives alone in my house.
Right.
So the story doesn't make any sense, but at the very least, like it was his last like horror movie fantasy thing.
Okay.
And
do you go on, sir?
Well, now he's just singing about like life, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Do you think? Do you guys think that Opeth, because obviously with these two new albums coming out, you know, people on the internet are raging about, you know, like, oh, this isn't the Opeth I know, you know, kind of shit like that. Do you think that you can pinpoint it down to a single record as to what set the expectations for what Opeth is? Or do you think it's a collective discography kind of thing up until Heritage?
It probably was a collective thing, but you know, you think back to where the metal scene was, especially in this country, at the turn of the century, it really was kind of non-existent, because everything was going on in Europe. And I think Blackwater Park was probably the first of their records that was widely accessible in this country. So because of that, it probably was Blackwater Park. And, you know, the amazing record that it was, while it's not my favorite album of theirs, it's still one of the greatest albums I've probably ever heard, and it's such a great combination of, you know, one style that was pretty, you know, well established at that point, and death metal, which had, you know, fallen off from the mid-90s till probably the beginning of the 2000s and is now, you know, reestablished itself as a very viable extreme metal outlet. But it's just the combination of what that album was and their first time coming to the U.S. on a tour was Blackwater Park. So it probably has to stem really from that, because after Blackwater Park, I mean, you still had, you know, Damnation and Deliverance, and you had Ghost Reveries, right. and those are all phenomenal albums. Damnation is a perfect example, like you guys were stating before, of what they can do when they're not being metal. It's the expectation had to come from Blackwater Park and even albums prior, but you know they've hit like they really I think they hit their ceiling with Ghost Reveries, and it's really kind of all been downhill from there. Even though Watershed wasn't bad, and you know, I'm really curious as to what the next album would be if you follow the internet rumor that if they were to go back death metal, they would be strictly death metal, which I think would be a very foolhardy decision, because, you know, Bloodbath works to me as a side project and not as a main gig for Akerfeld, and I can't imagine him doing as good a job with straight up death metal like
he's
he
also,
did with
he's also not in Bloodbath anymore.
Well, yeah, I know, I know right, that. I'm just saying, I'm just thinking of him in a pure death metal band standpoint.
Well, I think
I know that's Dan Swano's gig in, now.
Well, I think Bloodbath brings up an interesting point too, because they replaced him with Nick Holmes from Paradise Lost. I didn't see that coming. And Nick Holmes on the Bloodbath track that I've heard is back to growling, and he's doing this super grim, dark. He kind of sounds like the Deathspell Omega guy, like the creepy old man. Weirdness. But Paradise Lost did go metal again. But they when they went metal again, they're like, now we're a metal band that uses clean vocals. And I think in that, I like third period Paradise Lost best. I like Tragic Idol better than Gothic. I like their self-titled a lot. So I could see, you know, Opeth kicking the distortion back in and just being Michael doing clean singing. And that sounds great. I'd love to hear them doing like a proggy death and roll album with just him clean singing. I think that could be spectacular.
Clean singing can work on a death metal. I mean, hey, I didn't really think that it would work all that well until I heard some albums by Deceased, and I thought that was a really good way to approach that death metal from a really heavy metal standpoint, but not having the vocals that are like that over the top.
Yeah.
I brought up that that last point about you know, talking about what's their landmark album, if you had to narrow it down, kind of to set up, you know, if a Heritage or a Pale Communion kind of album was released prior, earlier in their discography at some point, how do you think they would have been received differently, if at all?
Well, I think they probably would have. Go on.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Forming my thoughts.
I think they probably would have hit a different audience.
Oh, what audience do you think that would
have been? Well, there was in the late 90s, early 2000s, and like I think Porcupine Tree is probably the band that broke biggest with it, but there was like classic prog revival going on. Bands like Spock's Beard, Riverside, stuff like that. And I think if right after Still Life they'd released Pale Communion, they would have just fallen into that crowd and probably not found the audience that they have now. Sure. Anathema is also kind of part of that crew a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But just remember, they are here because they're here.
Circular logic aside, I feel like that album title's like, do you remember when that fucking rapper Mims did that song, This Is Why I'm Hot? And I'm listening to the entire song, and I'm thinking to myself, he never explains why he's hot. He just says, this is why I'm hot.
Right. He's just hot because he's hot.
I'm here because I'm here. Right.
Go on.
I don't honestly think it would have made much of a difference. I think that, you know, time-wise, like, people who were fans of the band would still feel and would still be as separated as they are today. I mean, I look at when, you know, just, three albums into their career when Mastodon did Crack the Sky and...
Four albums in, sorry.
And people were just up, like, there were people that were up in arms about it because it didn't sound like, you know, it wasn't Leviathan again. And it was, like, different and weird and just, like, way, way the fuck out there. And, I mean, that's my favorite Mastodon record. That's one of my favorite records of all time. But I think that no matter, they could have done that, you know, early in their career, later in their career, I think it's still going to divide people. And it's really just going to kind of change who gets into your music now as opposed to who's going to stick with you from what you used to do.
That's the real problem. A lot of bands change enough that, like, you know, the fans of the band just, like, drop off the face of the planet. And I can draw a really good parallel to, I guess it would be kind of like Mastodon. You look back to the earlier Carcass records, and then you look at, you know, Necroticism showed a really great bridge from Symphonies of Sickness to Heartwork. And then the audience changed, it was more accessible, and there's a lot of the old grind freaks that don't even bother with Necroticism, and especially don't bother with Heartwork or
Swan Song.
So it's like people just get turned off to it. And I feel like it, more so in any genre, more so in this genre than any other, metal fans are extremely protective and particular of bands and particular sounds that bands are famous for. They just freak about that.
I find that interesting, though. I totally understand that and agree with it. But at the same time, it's interesting that fans are so protective of a band, say, like Opeth, or any progressive band for that matter, that, you know, by their definition of being progressive, they include a lot of different things, so that you think that that protective kind of, you know, feeling would be a lot more of a broader, you know, they would have a longer leash to let a band out on because they like so many of those elements that are kind of included in it.
Yeah, and I
see what I'm saying there.
I've always thought it's interesting that that people feel such, like, loyalty and protection about bands as opposed to albums. I mean, it's not hard. Like, if you don't like an album by a band, like, stop listening to it. Like, don't listen to it. I mean, listen to what you like. That's the great thing about, you know, not even CDs anymore, but just MP3s. You always have the music you want. You don't have to have anything you don't want. So, I mean, yeah, maybe you're not going to go and see them live on tour, but there's plenty of other music out there. You can remember the good times that you had with a band, and then now that they're doing something different, you find something new.
I did have a thought when I was. Keep in mind when Ackerfeldt started turning away from metal, that there was and it's still sort of going on. There was an absolute fucking epidemic of bands trying to replicate his formula and fucking it up.
That's a good point. That's
every other promo I got was some quote unquote progressive melodic death metal band with, like, grr, I'm growling and we're blast beating, and then suddenly it's a clean guitar with, like, two chorus pedals on it and this, like, incredibly pleading, soaring, emotive chorus. I have feelings. And it drove me up the fucking wall. And I can imagine that it probably drove him up the fucking wall. I mean, can you imagine?
Do you think that that's kind of maybe like a secondary kind of thing, you know, subconsciously for him, that's like, oh, I just have to, you know, find something totally new again.
I know that I wanted to get away from that, like, as much as I could. And if I was, like, involved in the industry being, like, the guy that sort of touched off that fire, I can imagine him never saying this out loud, but, you know, thinking to himself, like, I need to get the fuck away from these people. I don't want to speak to them. I don't want to be a part of it. And I don't blame him for that.
Well, I think again... Oh, go ahead.
There are a few bands, ironically, since he's kind of left, that finally did stick the landing. I think Cormorant stuck the landing. There's a British band called, I'll have to look the name up. I'm going to look it up during the next point and then bring the name up later. But there's like a one-man progressive death metal band from the UK that almost does what he does better than what he did. So in terms of like me being hungry for that sound, there's bands that will cater to that need for me. Mm-hmm. There's finally bands that are doing the Opeth thing about as well as he did. Cormorant's the big one for me.
Are they still around? I thought I saw that they broke up for a little while.
They have a new bassist because, what do you call it?
Arthur Von Nagel
works for Telltale Games now.
That's right. Mm. Got it. So they never really disbanded, though.
They had an album that came out earlier this year, as a matter of fact. I just never got around to it.
Okay.
I do think it's... I miss Arthur in that band. I did think Earth Diver was a step down from Dwellings in Metazoa. But I think it's a recoverable, like, we'll see what they do on the next record.
Gotcha. And to that point, I guess to kind of start wrapping things up here, for Opeth, kind of just to close our discussion here, what do you think the next album will be? I was kind of hopeful that Pale Communion would kind of be, you know, them going back to the what we think of their sound being. But do you think at this point that, you know, the stuff from like Stephen Wilson and the Storm Corrosion project are just kind of too ingrained in him to ever want to go back to death metal? Or do you think it's just, you know, maybe later down the road that happens again?
Yeah, I think if he goes back to death metal, I think it might be almost a completely different project. Like if I had to make a wager right now, I would bet that the next Opeth album would be a full on like Opeth Stephen Wilson collaboration. Like, I could see those two guys getting together and doing a double album, like, mm-hmm. where they both work with each other. And I think that's more the route that that Opeth is going to take here on out. Because I think
if I get another Storm Corrosion album, I'm going to be really pissed.
I love that terrible. Storm Corrosion album.
It was fucking horrible.
I only heard the one song.
You heard one too many.
I thought it was great. Like, it was perfect for what it was, I thought, but...
What, yeah. Sleeping music?
I just think that, you know, at this point, you know, going back to what Joe said about, you know, if he's got this feeling that, or if it started with him having this feeling that, you know, oh my God, there's all these, you know, shitty ripoffs of my sound, I got to do something else, then I think if he genuinely felt that way, then I don't think there's any way that he's going to look at going back to death metal after this backlash. Like, because I think that no matter what, people are going to look at, like, yeah, he realized it wasn't what the fans wanted, and so he made another death metal, progressive death metal record. And I just see Michael Åkerfeldt being just too proud and also, you know, uninterested in doing that.
Let his returns start deteriorating. Let him get off of Roadrunner. And I say give it... This seems like a normal life cycle for a band. Catatonia did it. Paradise Lost did it, as I said. All the big prog rock bands did their weirdo hi-fi pop phase and then kind of went back into doing what they used to do. Give it 8 years. When I'm 30 with kids, I bet he's gonna do an I'm a Bitter Old Man heavy record with clean singing, and I bet I'm gonna fucking dig it. By the way, just to go back, because I did look it up in my iTunes, the band that I referenced earlier is called A Fall of Every Season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A Fall of Every Season is amazing.
They did a record last year called Amends. Austin Lund from Panopticon, another band that kind of do the Opeth thing in a different way very well. Austin Lund recommended that I listen to that record, Amends. It's spectacular. Everyone who's listened to this podcast, please, please, please go support that band.
As a member of this podcast, I'm
gonna have
to
check that out.
Yeah. Joe, did you listen to their first album? The first A Fall of Every Season record?
So I bought it I have it like downloaded on from my eMusic account. And I've just done a very foolish thing where I've told Invisible Orange's commenters to tell me what to listen to for the next 2 weeks. And it's probably going to stretch into 2 months because I've got way too many recommendations. So it's in the queue. The queue is incredibly long.
It's just, it's all I'll say is it's, you know, it's every bit as good as the, as a men's, but it's even more like heartbreaking and like mournful. It's great.
Well, clearly I get high on my own depression. I'm a metal blogger, so that sounds about
that yeah, sounds. Pour yourself like some scotch, wait for some snow, and then throw that record on, and it's just like.
Oh, I live in Seattle. There's no snow. There's no snow here. Just endless rain, endless black skies work. And rain.
Yep, that'll do.
Endless pain. Come on, get the creator references right.
Extreme aggression.
Joe, you're saying that in Seattle, eternal rains will come.
And the bodies will float down the river.
All right. Well, I think that that wraps it up for this second podcast for Brutalitopia. Thanks to everyone that took part in this, and thanks to everyone listening.
And Joe, no thanks to the person who didn't show up.
Yeah, we won't. But we won't name any names.
Hey! Right? I said, hey. Hey. Yeah. Seriously though, disappointing.
I hope he's crying into his soup right now.
Next, and
he's crying into some wonderful imperial stout, probably.
By the way, while I have you guys all on the line,
sure.
Who was it that keeps posting that distorted picture of me chugging Yingling at Maryland Death Fest?
That's
Mick.
That would be me. Yeah.
Even remember you taking that picture.
that was Jack that took that.
Surprised I couldn't get one of you strangling me when we were watching Enabler, Joe.
Oh my god, Enabler is so good. I fucking love Enabler.
These two guys weren't there for that, but you just like bounced and be like, "Hey man," like grabbed me out of the crowd.
Well, no one was getting into the pit. I'm like, it's like black and crusty. It's like it's a pit record. Get in the pit, you. Morons. It's MDF. Start the circle. Spin cycle. Go.
Well, if you didn't grab me, the next guy over was Jordan Campbell. You'd drag his ass out there.
Next
too.
next year I'm grabbing Jordan. Next year I am grabbing Jordan.
Well, I'd say that's a wrap for the podcast. Joe, can we expect you to be a guest sometime again?
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Or the Afro-Brazilian Inquisition.
Thank you very much. I'd love to do this again.
Excellent. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and everyone say goodbye, and we'll sign you off.
Bye, everyone.
Adios.
Goodbye, everybody.